We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play.
Bears Monday with Big Ant.
You just want to get into your Chicago bag, start trying to apply a Chicago accent here or there. It's not something I do very well.
Sirius XM and Fox 32 football analyst.
And the bag guys get stopped at the entrance, and he tells them nobody leaves this place without singing the blues.
Anthony Herron and Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Yeah, we're going to do this every Monday, 1 o'clock, after a Bears game. I'm lucky to have Big Ant Herron joining me here on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you could just go to alpamonteford.com. Big Ant, it was a pretty crazy sports day in Chicago yesterday. I'm curious on how you took it all in.
Well, for me, because the duties I have, you know, doing Bears post game live and then doing the post show with Olin Cruz, and then coming back doing TV later on in the evening again with Fox 32. A lot of my sports viewing on a Sunday, on a Bears game day, is just through the lens of trying to watch the Bears game very intently while also taking part in some social media, perhaps on occasion changing the channel. Also had potty training going on in the house over the weekend, so there were moments where it's like, all right, let me get back to the DVR after we're like negotiating with the two-year-old here. Yeah, you can do it. Go ahead. I don't want to. No. Just go ahead. Do it in the potty. You don't need the diaper. So there was a lot of that happening in the house yesterday that kind of, you know, had a few other little factors in the schedule of the day that made things go askew on occasion. So there was a lot happening that I had to use the DVR to catch up on a few things.
Well, let's talk about the reason that we bring you on, and that is Bears football. What happened here in the fourth quarter that allowed the Bears to get back into this game?
Well, a lot of Lions got hurt, especially, you know, you go in with their first pick in the draft, who I thought was the best corner in the draft, and Jeff Okuda doesn't play in the game at all. Then multiple other DBs go down during the game, and that all just sort of ascends towards the final stanza of the game, where the Bears had been out of rhythm on offense. And I think, you know, a couple of factors in that, where we've seen the Mitchell Trubisky experience up to this point, where he can quite frequently start off slow, look out of sorts, mechanics be out of kilter, and then as the game continues, and especially as the Bears end up in some cases down by multiple scores, then that's where he can get into his bag a little bit and start playing some of his best football. And we saw all elements of that play out yesterday. What I was struck by is that, well, I do feel like there were some nuances within the way that Matt Nagy managed the game, like towards the end of the first half, that was certainly within question. I did feel like I saw a lot of growth in Matt Nagy's willingness to just call run plays, to try and take the game out of the hands of his young quarterback in a lot of those scenarios where he did, you know, they got to some third downs and where he felt like he needed to just have Mitch make a few plays, and early those plays weren't being made in the passing attack. And you can point to some of those things being a part of just not having the rhythm of preseason games and some of the additional reps that were lost with some new targets like Ted Ginn, who he was late on, like Jimmy Graham, who he was high on at a certain point in the game. So there were some misses early that you could try to point to the offseason for, but since we've seen Mitch for several years up to this point, you can also point to the bad mechanics that went into some of those moments. And then as he began to stand in the pocket, plant his feet, and step into passes with more frequency, then his accuracy did uptick as the game wore on. But, you know, when you got new DBs on the field, Matt Patricia and his new defensive coordinator, they were mixing more zone than the Bears had seen against the Lions at any point under Patricia before. That was throwing off Mitch, as has been the case during Mitch's career. Then when the Lions went more man and the Bears said, all right, we got to go some no huddle, we got to go some tempo, we got to just let Mitch cook. And then Mitch was able to start cooking in the fourth quarter, but there were a couple factors for why.
I want to go back before we destroy Matt Patricia. I want to go back and talk a little bit about why we were seeing Mitch be off time and off platform. Like we heard him last week talking about all of the work that's been done, John DeFilippo working with him on footwork. When we see him not, like, sometimes throwing with both feet off the ground and not in a good way, because there are other quarterbacks who do that. You know, the two guys that are in the same draft of him are really successful at doing that. And so is the guy in Baltimore. When we see those types of things break down, is that just, in your opinion, is this just a byproduct of there were no game reps, or is this a problem that has persisted that you were surprised to see, even with some things that he hadn't seen on tape from the Lions?
It strikes me as a problem that's persisted, specifically with the footwork, with the mechanics, because it has been such a frequent refrain for the way that the Bears are evaluating Mitch and evaluating what gives him success at certain moments and at times where he doesn't have success. And it's not always going to be a clean pocket, of course, in the NFL. And you won't always have the ability, the potential to just have those pure passing mechanics when you're trying to throw the football, especially if you're trying to do so while you're on the move. That being said, when there's the potential, when there is a clean enough pocket, when the play is developing on time and in rhythm, and you as the quarterback specifically are not climbing the pocket in the manner that would be expected of you, you're falling off on a throw for no reason when there's not pass rush, it's there. That goes to repetitive mistakes that are there that Mitch Trubisky would continue to make. Again, as the game wore on, he got better with that. You can certainly tell that, whether it's, you know, Matt Nagy, whether it's Bill Lazor, whether it's Flip, with someone who is communicating directly with him, getting in his ear, reminding him of the mechanics that they've been working on over and over again. But when it comes down to it, that there will need to come a point where you wonder why the separation between what has impressed the Bears in practice with Mitch Trubisky for multiple years. Now, how many times did we hear about what a great week of practice Mitch had, and then in the game, it didn't always come to fruition? And so that's going to need to come together. Those things, what they see on the practice field, what they're coaching him to do, will need to be married more closely with what is actually taking place in game. And one thing that I got to credit Matt Nagy for yesterday is 28 run attempts. You know, would it be nice to see David Montgomery get a few more carries? Sure. Tariq Cohen down in the red zone? I think that's worthy of question. But just overall, I feel like I saw growth from Matt Nagy in calling the offense for the Bears in the manner that I think suits where they're at as a franchise, where his quarterback's at. I would like to see more movement with the play action specifically. I think there's some nuance to where things can grow and things should continue to grow from Matt Nagy's perspective. But for as much as I've criticized Matt Nagy for not running the ball more, not setting up more play action, putting too much of the offense on the shoulders of Mitch as a passer from the pocket, I at least saw growth there. And what was concerning me for about three quarters yesterday was, with as well as the Bears ran the football and as many open targets, and not open with drastic separation, like really Darnell Mooney, who I was really impressed with, was probably the only player who I thought within his routes consistently separated from defensive backs in a pretty enhanced manner. Other than that, all right, you're talking some tight window throws or fitting it in over the ear of a defensive back, which Mitch has the ability to do. I thought Matt Nagy grew yesterday, and what concerned me was, as well as the Bears ran the ball, Mitch still didn't look good for three quarters. That's something that there's things correctable on film, but at a certain point, you got to ask your quarterback to be able to do that for four quarters with what you corrected him to do.
I also, I'm someone that loves to look at formations. Seeing a triple tight end formation yesterday, Big Ant, gotta tell you, as a football fan, I got a little excited. I was like, hey, look at this. Like, they are throwing some things out there for the people. So what does that do to defenses when you're able to throw different formational looks at them?
When you have a tight end who's proven to be as versatile as J.P. Holtz has for them. Now you have what can be more defined roles in your offense, where you have Jimmy Graham, who is, you know, basically a maxed out wide receiver. So if he's on the backside of the play, he'll throw a cut block for you. If he's in the slot, maybe he can take on a DB. But other than that, he's kind of, he'll just get in the way a little bit, but that's okay. You know, he's a Hall of Fame caliber talent just as a sheer pass receiver. So that can be Jimmy's role. Demetrius Harris, who was brought in, thought of more as a blocker, ran a nice seven route in the end zone, was open in the corner in the end zone on one of the throws where Mitch missed him earlier in the game before he really kind of got going later. And that Cole Kmet, I thought he had a nice game with showing his willingness to block, willingness to set the edge. But those are all your more true U and Y type of tight ends. Whereas with Holtz, a guy whose name I brought up a lot last season in the games the Bears did have some success running the football, I thought it was outstanding to see them start with Holtz in an offset I formation early in the game. First three snaps of the game, all run plays. QB sneak didn't work out. You got to punt the football away. But I thought that set a tone with his offense, with his offensive line, for what Matt Nagy was willing to do. And then formationally, the variety of run plays we saw from the Bears, whether it was Montgomery in the backfield using a fullback in certain situations or not, Tariq Cohen in the backfield out of a variety of formations, sometimes motioning back into the backfield from the receiver position, and also having Cordero Patterson in there, as we've all been anticipating, getting his work in the backfield with a variety of formations also. So using different formational looks, different personnel groupings, but using it to set up the run game as frequently as we saw the Bears do that yesterday. I really enjoyed seeing that happen, and I thought it just set up so many other things where the offensive line was able to play well, not just in the run phase, but making their pass protection. Like I've been talking about for a couple of years here, it makes their pass protection more effective as well when the defensive line has to really dig their heels in, anticipating run plays more frequently.
Let's flip over to the defensive side. I feel like a lot of this is just rust, okay? Like, when I was looking at the linebackers yesterday, I felt like Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan were as slow in recognizing what was going on as ever. Is that just that they haven't played, or is there something to be worried about there? Because Danny in particular looked really slow, and speed is a big part of his game.
Yeah. I thought Roquan had some really nice moments in the game. I thought he and Danny also had some moments where they kind of got misaligned and got outgapped up front on the interior of the defensive line, where, you know, when you don't have preseason games, and this was going to be, of course, the first preseason where we were really going to see the starters get more work, and they didn't have that opportunity. And then, you know, you've got both Akeem Hicks and Danny Trevathan come off, you know, pretty gruesome elbow injuries from last season. So you're going to find ways to kind of limit their exposure to that type of collision in practice as well. Let's get Khalil Mack in a little bubble wrap here and there. All in all, because of what we've seen from this core group, especially within the front seven, I'm not worried yet about the way they defended the run. I did see where guys weren't necessarily getting knocked off the ball. I saw a lot of guys hitting blocks, but sticking on blocks, whereas normally Akeem Hicks, once he shocks a blocker, he's not just going to be able to shock that guy, but he'll condense the hole, making life easier on the linebackers, on the defensive backs, when they have to fill or run the alley in the run game. Didn't necessarily see Akeem Hicks condensing the hole, pressing the body of the offensive blocker into the hole to make the life of those filling the gap much easier. Same thing on the interior. You don't have Eddie Goldman. He opted out. Bilal Nichols has really been more of a 3-and-5 technique in this scheme in the past. Now, if he's asked to play nose, that's going to be a different life for him in there to really be kind of grunting it up in the middle in a way that he hasn't had to before. And you get John Jenkins rotating through. He had a couple of nice moments. But overall, I think as much as anything, rust is a term that works. You know, just the intricacies of how you fit the blocks, how you shock the blockers, how you make sure that up front you're condensing those holes. Those are things I saw, as opposed to necessarily, a few missed tackles. That goes to some of the physicality that may have lacked just without preseason in camp and all day doing what he does. Adrian Peterson, he's one of the more physical runners we've ever seen, so he's going to force some missed tackles. But I'm not too worried from what I saw in the Bears run defense, because I think all are things they'll look at on film Danny Trevathan with his big RoboCop elbow deal going on. He'll have to get more accustomed to playing in a game and being able to physically shock blockers with that. I've been through that before where you got your, you know, your elbow brace on. How do you move with it? Can you really trust your elbow to club guys? Can you really trust that arm to shock and extend away on blockers and things like that? So I do think the Bears, I'm still confident they'll be fine in the run phase of things. There are things I saw that are correctable that do account more, that I would attribute more to rust than necessarily kind of a long-standing issue.
How do you think them missing Robert Quinn impacted the game yesterday?
Well, there was a couple of things. One, Khalil Mack, I thought he, for a lot of the game, he was playing better against the run than he was legitimately rushing the passer. There was a number of one-on-one opportunities where he didn't get home. Something that he did, but a number of them that he didn't get home until what I was struck by, and I was glad the TV copy ended up showing it during the broadcast, where Khalil Mack like rallied the team on the sideline there and got far more rah-rah than we've ever seen Khalil Mack get as far as just being really vocal on the sidelines. That's not really his thing. That hasn't been something that we've seen from him during his Bears career. And after he kind of rallied the troops on the sideline, kind of got in everybody's grill, I'm sure was getting on himself as well, then his game, I think, enhanced, not just in the run phase, but in the way, the frequency he was getting home and beating blockers with his pass rush. I thought Olin brought up an interesting point when we were on the post show last night, where there's probably not another position on the field that's as enhanced by atmosphere, by crowd noise, as the defensive line is. And so where, you know, as a road team, you wouldn't necessarily have the home team roaring as a D lineman to really get things going for you, but there is some additional emotion and juice that comes with being a D lineman, with the additional noise, and if the opponent has to go on a silent count, and if the crowd is getting on the home team, those types of things. There is that not necessarily dependency. I wouldn't go that far with that phrase, but you do gain more, I think, at the D line position from having atmosphere in the building than you do anywhere else. And Olin actually brought that up last night. I hadn't thought of it through that lens while watching the game yesterday, but the Bears D-line, it didn't seem to have that additional life force that we tend to think of from Akeem Hicks. The additional kind of force that Khalil Mack brings to the game physically wasn't there until he kind of got in everybody's grill on the sideline a little bit, and I thought he enhanced his play from there. And overall, you know, without Robert Quinn, I don't necessarily see Robert Quinn as a guy who enhances the Bears' run defense that much, but as much as we'll be called upon them as we continue to see teams running the ball, using play action, using quick game with what they anticipate from facing that Bears defensive front, then it'll be great for them to have that opposing force off the opposite edge from Khalil Mack, because you really didn't get much of anything from Barkevious Mingo yesterday as a pass rusher. You know, kind of after getting stymied at the line of scrimmage, he fell back downhill and retraced and got involved in a couple of plays, but for as physically gifted as he was coming out of college, he just hasn't been a guy who's rounded into a playmaker at the NFL level. So Robert Quinn will become a major loss for them if it's an extended absence, because then you're in a similar position that you were last year where you don't have that other edge rusher that folks have to honor, and you may have likely a worse player in the other phases of the game from Leonard Floyd as well, between the run, the pass coverage, some of those things where Floyd is really effective at. As a pass rusher, you will hopefully get a lot more of Robert Quinn's back in the lineup. But if you don't, you're going to have a much worse opposing outside linebacker than Leonard Floyd than what you've been having the last few years.
Leonard Floyd with a sack last night. That was good to see for him. Really Agreed. Good. Before I let you go, I want to talk about Mitch again, but I want to ask you something really specific. Obviously, people are happy about what they saw in the fourth quarter. It's something that I expected against man coverage. The thing with Mitch is that it seems like these moments of him being great are in a bubble. Mm-hmm. What does he need to do to stack on this, where it's a good performance and maybe you see another good performance against the Giants?
The difficult thing for Matt Nagy is going to be to balance how to get his quarterback in rhythm, how to get the most out of Mitch versus how to put the team in the best scenario for success and for a win. Like a Jim Kelly was a guy in the Buffalo Bills offense back in the day that got into a rhythm from a volume of passing. Warren Moon got into a rhythm in the run and shoot from a volume of passing. You know, Patrick Mahomes gets into a rhythm from a volume of passing. Now, Pat Mahomes is always in rhythm, but especially like last season where the Chiefs didn't have much of a run game to speak of, he would get into a rhythm with a volume of passing. Mitch isn't any of those guys. So where Mitch, he may operate out at his best from no huddle, from getting into that rhythm, from getting to throw the ball more, move around a lot. But since Mitch just isn't, he hasn't proven to be an elite passer, that doesn't suit the team best. So these games where the ball, where the air gets taken out of the ball and Mitch is not as tasked with throwing the ball that frequently, he does seem to take a while to really get his game going. But just like we saw from the Bills with Josh Allen last year, like we saw from the 49ers on their way to the Super Bowl run with Jimmy G, a number of examples around the league of offenses that don't necessarily suit what your classic passer would want from the volume of passes to get into a rhythm, but what's best for the squad? How much can I expect from this individual behind center that will put everyone in the best position to win? That part goes to Matt Nagy. I thought he was much closer to that. I thought he did a more effective job with that balance yesterday than we saw from him a lot of times last season. The rest of it is going to be up to Mitch Trubisky. If we get that game plan and that level of execution from the rest of the positions, some of the grabs, like after last year where suddenly the receivers couldn't catch, the catches we saw in the game yesterday from guys like Robinson and Miller, if everybody around Mitch is playing that well and the Bears still aren't putting points on the board, this is the most comfortable I've been in saying, yes, it is on Mitch. It's not on Nagy. It's not on the receivers' drops. It's not on the O-line. At this point, yes, it is more fully on Mitch than at any other point in his career.
Big Ant, I appreciate the time and the information. Thank you so much, sir.
You got it, Loho. Do it again.
That's right. After every game on Mondays, Big Ant is going to be with me at 1 o'clock. It's great, great breakdown of what goes on. We need to take a timeout. If you missed the no-hitter yesterday, we're going to let you relive the end of it, and Pat uses call. Stick around. That's next here on.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I know that everyone can't be everywhere at every time. Like, your consumption of sports yesterday was, I'm sure, out of control, because I know that mine was. And you were probably watching the no-hitter after watching the Bears game. Now, I know there are some people that are out there driving, and they were having to flip back and forth between our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780, and what was going on the score with the no-hitter. But I can't let a no-hitter happen and have the great Pat Hughes be the person who's calling it and not share a little bit of it. So we took 3 minutes. Here's the last 3 minutes of the no-hitter so that you can enjoy Pat, Coombe, and Zach.
Mills now is one out away. Jace Peterson at the plate. Here's the pitch. Fastball just missed inside.
Chris Siegel has not raised the right arm in a couple pitches that easily could be called a strike. Ball hit the strike zone.
Mills coming back 1-0. Peterson takes low and inside for a ball. Two balls and no strikes. Peterson replaced Christian Yelich a couple of innings ago. Two down, bottom of the ninth inning. Here comes the 2-0 pitch. Peterson, a check swing. It's down low for ball three. Mills, 29-year-old right-hander, coming back. The 3-0 pitch in there for a called strike. Actually, he'll be 29 here in November. Let's see if he can come back and get Peterson. The 3-1 pitch on the way. A swing and a ground ball toward the middle. Baez has it. Throws to first. Alec Mills has just pitched a no-hitter. A no-hitter for Cubs right-hander Alec Mills. A ground ball to Baez, a routine play. The Cubs are mobbing the young right-hander on the mound, jumping up and down. What a great moment for Alec Mills as the Cubs win the ball game 12 to nothing.
Well, a great weekend for the Chicago Cubs and a great day for Alec Mills and the Cubs. Millsy with this great command all game long. There's only a couple hard hit balls all game, and he finally gets on a 3-1 pitch, a ground ball to Baez, and that was it. A no-hitter for Alec Mills. Congratulations.
His first complete game as a big league pitcher, and I would say he did it in fine style with a no-hitter, the first one by a Cub since Jake Arrieta did have a no-hitter back on April 21st, 2016. In a game at the Great American Ballpark against the Reds. It is the 16th no-hitter in Chicago Cubs history. Right-hander Alec Mills makes baseball history here at Miller Park in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. What a great moment for him.
Oh, you just can't be happier. He just dominated the game. The Cubs offense did their job. And what you love is the way he attacked the game, the second half of the game, once the Cubs gave him the lead, and Millsy getting hugs and handshakes all around as he's going into the Cubs dugout. That is just a great scene for a young pitcher in Major League Baseball.
So the Cubs win the series, and they do so in very dramatic fashion, rallying last night in the ninth inning for four runs to turn the game around and win 4-2. And as an encore today, Alec Mills pitches a no-hitter against the Milwaukee Brewers, the 16th in Cubs franchise history.
That's the great Pat Hughes on the call here on The Score. A couple other notes. 12 years almost to the day that Carlos Zambrano threw his no-hitter at Miller Park. The crazy thing is where you have Pat talking about the Arrieta no-hitter is that David Ross was the catcher for that no-hitter. He's the third manager to catch and manage a no-hitter in the last 2 years. Scott Servais and Brad Ausmus are the others. There hasn't been a Cubs no-hitter at Wrigley since Milt Pappas did it in 1972. Mills hadn't gone deeper than seven innings in his 15 career starts. Tied for the fewest swings and misses, five, with Dallas Braden. He did get 26 called strikes, which is the most by a Cubs pitcher this year. The Cubs are in first place by four games now over the St. Louis Cardinals. Alec Mills was on with Dan Bernstein earlier today, and part of the reason that I wanted to share the call was because I knew that there were people who didn't get an opportunity to hear the call. One of the people that didn't get to hear the call, because he was making the call, was Alec Mills, and I didn't know that his Cubs love ran this deep. Take a listen to what he said about being able to hear Pat Hughes call his no-hitter.
I was just kind of thinking about that when you guys were playing that, just hearing Pat Hughes, kind of take me down the stretch was something special. Actually grew up a Cubs fan, and so it's kind of cool to hear him do all that. And I know my dad is definitely, living in the moment, him being a Cubs fan and hearing everything. And obviously to have, people like Pat Flynn and all them, I guess take you down the stretch, I'll say it again, was something special.
That's dope, man. That's dope. Probably grew up listening to Pat. And to have that for your archive, your own personal archive, is really, really special. So let's go to the pitching aspect of this. Another thing that Alec Mills talked with Bernstein about was how all of this kind of happened, even for a guy that hasn't taken a lot of games deeper than the seventh inning.
You know, I think sometimes a lot of people, I guess, would try to say, block it out, don't think about it. I think it's kind of a delicate balance. I mean, I think obviously I was thinking about it, and it's obviously going to creep into your head of what's kind of happening and the gravity of the situation. But, I just tried to stay focused, and like you said, next hitter, next pitch, kind of trying to make a game plan ahead, just so I was prepared and nothing kind of surprised me if it happened. But at the same time, I think, knowing what was happening and kind of rolling with it helped a little bit. Obviously just having fun, knowing, if I had executed and made some pitches and got a little bit of luck along the way, what would happen made everything a little better.
Have you had anything close to this in your athletic career at any level, at high school, grade school, college, anything?
I think I may have thrown a no-hitter in high school, at one point. And then I think maybe Little League threw a couple, or but I who knows? We didn't record any of that back then. I don't know. I don't know if it actually happened. But I think I had one in high school, but obviously that was seven innings. So yeah, nothing really to this magnitude. I don't think I'd had thrown more than seven innings in a big league game. So it was kind of crazy going out there for the eighth, and then obviously the ninth was something special for me. So it's just, like I said, I keep saying it, and it's a broken record, but unforgettable.
I thought I saw an authenticator come over and grab the ball from the final out. Do you have it?
I don't have it with me right now. The clubby has it, but yeah, she got it and authenticated it. Authenticated my jersey, my cleats, and my glove. So yeah, all that stuff I'll be able to keep. Will be something special that I can display or just have at home and just have something to look at when things you know, are over and all that in the future. So obviously, pretty cool moment.
This guy had an academic scholarship to UT Martin. He walked on to the college team, and he wasn't even really sure that he was on the team. He just kind of kept coming back, and they were like, yeah, you could pitch and do some stuff. To go from that, from being a guy that had played a whole bunch of sports when he was younger, to go from, I don't even know if I'm going to play baseball anymore, to walking onto that team and then throwing a no-hitter in your 15th start in the majors, that's damn cool. Congratulations to Alec Mills. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about why the White Sox are so hot, and a couple more things I want to talk about is this Bears game from yesterday. I will share those with you next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I got to tell you, these White Sox now sitting with the American League's best record at 30-16. I don't know if I ever, even in my wildest fantasies, had the White Sox being this good this year. I was just hoping that they would find their way to the playoffs by hook or by crook. And now they got an opportunity to win the division, be the number one seed in the American League. It's all pretty crazy. They even got incredible pitching from their bullpen over this past weekend. They got a bullpen start yesterday, one of their prospects. It was really, really cool to see them do that. And to share that with what was going on with the Cubs, and then to see the Bears come out and do work in the fourth quarter of that game was really tremendous. I am someone that loves a good story, and I absolutely love when things come together for sports fans. And it's so unexpected. And it was unexpected until you got to the 10-minute mark of the fourth quarter of that game. Incredible all the way around. We all get to rejoice a little bit today in some shared fun, which is fantastic. It doesn't have to mean anything. It doesn't have to mean the Cubs are going to win the World Series, the White Sox are going to win the World Series, or the Bears are going to win the NFC North. It just has to mean that yesterday, as sports fans, we got to have a good time. And you cannot beat that. Can't beat that with a stick. That's what it's all about. I'll talk with McNeil and Parkins next here on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.